Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Some Americans say the United States should consider providing nuclear arms to Japan and South Korea, America's closest military allies in Asia. Such Americans could become more influential in U.S. politics if Donald Trump is elected president. Trump has won the largest number of delegates in his attempt to become the Republican Party's presidential candidate. During the campaign, Trump has suggested that Japan and South Korea should have a right to arm themselves with nuclear weapons. He also said the U.S. should consider removing troops from countries that do not agree to pay more for the U.S. military bases on their territory. This has led some people to question America's desire to guarantee security in East Asia. It has also strengthened the position of those who say America's Asian allies should have their own nuclear weapons to protect themselves. The United States currently has about 28,500 troops in South Korea and 54,000 in Japan. The Japanese government reportedly pays about $1.6 billion to the United States every year for the military bases in Japan. South Korea pays over $866 million for the U.S. bases on its territory. Some observers say the United States would be in violation of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty if it gave nuclear weapons to its allies. The treaty is supposed to limit the spread of nuclear weapons. Moon Kun-sik works at the Korea Defense and Security Forum. He said, if the U.S. allies defend themselves, as Trump has said, the alliance will be broken, and it will lead to a nuclear domino situation in Asia. In the 1960s and 1970s, conservatives in Japan and South Korea sought to develop nuclear weapons in the two countries. They were worried about their security because China had developed nuclear weapons. And their worries have increased because of North Korea's nuclear activities. But the United States has been able to persuade its allies in Asia to stay under the protection of the American nuclear umbrella. However, Trump's threat to remove U.S. troops from Asia could increase the power of minority voices in Japan's parliament and South Korea's National Assembly. Those lawmakers say their countries should not depend on the United States for protection. In January, North Korea conducted its fourth nuclear test. Reaction came quickly from Won Yoo-chul, the South Korean National Assembly floor leader for the ruling party. He said, in the face of the North's fearsome, destructive nuclear weaponry, the time has come for us to have a peaceful nuclear program for self-defense. Hiroshi Nunokawa teaches at Hiroshima University in Japan. He said, if Trump's statements become a reality, there will be politicians that will agree, and a lot will be enthusiastic, I believe. Takashi Hiraoka is a peace activist and a former mayor of Hiroshima, the first city to be attacked by a nuclear weapon. He said that if Trump becomes president, he has to take responsibility for the fate of humankind. He cannot avoid the dangers associated with nuclear weapons. Arming South Korea and Japan with nuclear weapons would likely increase tensions in East Asia. It would also end any support from China and Russia for international action as a way to pressure North Korea to end its nuclear program. While Trump is just a candidate and not yet president, his words are having an effect in Asia. Some people believe what he says could weaken the trust people have in America's commitment to the area, even if Trump does not intend for that to be the result of his statements. Daniel Pinkston teaches international relations at Troy University in Seoul. He says, these types of statements and behavior are already doing damage. It is already undermining confidence of the U.S. in East Asia and in Japan and South Korea in particular.
Three bombings across the Iraqi capital Wednesday killed at least 93 people, according to the Associated Press. At least 165 others were reported wounded. The deadliest explosion took place just after sunrise, when many Iraqis were on their way to work. A car bomb exploded near a market in a Shiite city area of Baghdad. The explosion killed at least 63 people and wounded more than 80 others. Several cars and nearby buildings were badly damaged, officials said. The self-declared Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attack. The Sunni Muslim group has carried out similar attacks, often in Shiite areas of the city. Islamic State said a suicide bomber carried out the attack. Iraqi officials denied that a suicide bomber was involved. Later on Wednesday, a bombing targeted a police station in the mostly Shiite area of Kadhimiye, northwest of central Baghdad. That bombing killed at least 18 people, including five policemen. Over 30 other people were wounded. In northern Baghdad, a suicide attacker set off a car bomb in the Sunni district of Jamia. That bombing killed at least 12 people and wounded over 40 others. I'm Mernoush Karimian.
Myanmar has the third highest number of landmine casualties in the world. Only Colombia and Afghanistan have more deaths and injuries from mine explosions. That information comes from the Landmine and Cluster Munition Monitor. The monitor reported that mines injured 3,745 people in Myanmar between 1999 and 2014. It said 396 of them died from their injuries. As the group noted, this is believed to be only a small fraction of the actual figure, because the government does not collect information on deaths and injuries from landmines. The monitor found that in 2014 alone, exploding mines hurt 251 people in Myanmar, also known as Burma. 45 of them died from their injuries. In 2013, there were 145 casualties. The group noted that the government and rebel fighters continue to use mines. Yeshua Moser Pwangsuan is the Monitor's Myanmar researcher. Mine warfare has consistently been a characteristic of armed conflict in Myanmar. That has not changed, he said. The group noted that Myanmar has not signed the 1997 Ottawa Mine Ban Treaty. It said in 2014, Myanmar, Syria, and North Korea were the only countries with confirmed new use of the weapons. Ethnic conflicts have been a problem for years in southeastern Myanmar. Rural areas of Karenni State have some of the highest levels of active mines. The Monitor says the states of Karenni and Karen and the Bago region are among the most heavily mined areas in the country. Some observers suspect the military deploys mines made in its weapons production centers. They said ethnic rebels use foreign and locally made mines as defensive weapons. The devices keep the rebels from being captured by government troops. A government-proposed ceasefire led to a reduction in fighting in the southeast. In September 2015, the government and eight rebel groups agreed to a nationwide ceasefire. But in the north, fighting with the Kachin Independence Army and other groups has increased, and so has the use of landmines. In 2013, the European Union gave $4.6 million to create the Myanmar Mine Action Center, operated by the government. Workers from aid groups then were sent to Myanmar to help with mapping and removal of mines. The workers also helped landmine victims and launched public information campaigns about the issue. In the past, the country's military rulers had banned such activities. But the government and the military would not let the groups disarm the mines or make maps until ceasefire talks were completed. The 2015 agreement says landmine removal should happen in accordance with the progress of the peace process. But since it was signed, the government has yet to approve the disarming of mines. The Danchurch Aid Humanitarian Mine Action operates in southeastern Myanmar. The Mine Action Center has failed completely. It doesn't exist, said the group's Bjorn Ussing. A fraction of the EU money has been used for some training and cars, a small survey. He says the language of the ceasefire on mine removal is vaguely worded. We will have to see what that means. He said the lack of progress in disarming mines threatens plans by Myanmar and Thailand to let about 150,000 refugees return home in coming years. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Taiwan's lawmakers are debating whether to remove one of the country's most popular tourist attractions, a memorial to Chiang Kai-shek. A 6-meter-tall statue of Chiang Kai-shek has been in the capital city of Taipei since 1980. More than 7 million people, including people from other countries, visited the memorial and nearby buildings in 2015. Chiang ruled Taiwan from the mid-40s until his death in 1975. His Nationalist Party ruled all of China until it lost the civil war to the communists led by Mao Zedong. Chiang and his supporters then fled to Taiwan. Chiang placed Taiwan under martial law in 1949. It ended in 1987, 12 years after he died. During campaigns to end opposition to nationalist rule under Chiang, thousands of people were killed and tens of thousands were imprisoned. In February, nationalists lost control of parliament. They will lose the presidency later this month. The nationalists' loss of power to the Democratic Progressive Party means it will be easier for the DPP and its supporters in parliament to consider making changes to the Chiang Monument. Su Yongming is a legislator from a minority party. He led a legislative meeting, called a hearing, about the memorial recently. "I believe a lot of people think it should be redone, as this memorial honors Chiang Kai-shek, and to commemorate Chiang Kai-shek, I think, is strange, as there are a lot of things for which he needs to take responsibility," he said. Legislators are considering changing the memorial into an archive for all Taiwanese presidents. Other possible changes include making it a place to honor protest movements, or one that shows the pain caused by Taiwan's authoritarian history. Some legislators want some or all of the memorial to be destroyed, but others fear such an action would divide Taiwan. Some Taiwanese still consider Chiang's role in history so important that his statue should not be removed from the center in Taipei. Some people believe his fight against Mao Zedong kept the island from being ruled by the communists. Joanna Lei leads the Chenghua 21st Century think tank in Taiwan. Lei says changing the memorial would be a highly political and ideologically driven move by the new Democratic Progressive Party to eradicate all records, especially the records of Chiang Kai-shek, who brought lots of people from mainland China to Taiwan. So, if they are trying to gradually phase out the connection with mainland China, then removing the roots would be a very important political move. There are many memorials to Chiang in parks and public schools throughout Taiwan. Many of them are statues made of bronze or stone that show him smiling and wearing military clothing. The Taipei Times newspaper estimated that in 2000 there were 43,000 Chiang statues in the country. When the Democratic Progressive Party was in power from 2000 to 2008, it removed Chiang's name from the center in Taipei, where the large statue sits. The decision was supported by many people in Taiwan. In 2014, high school activists asked to have Jiang's statue removed from their schools. And people sometimes damage Jiang's statues in public places. I'm Mario Ritter.
Many people like to use their phones or tablets at night before they go to sleep. However, the light from mobile devices can interfere with sleep. But not all light carries the same risk. Recent studies have shown that within the light spectrum, blue light can have the worst effect on sleep. A study in the UK showed that blue light actually can keep sleepy people awake. Tired drivers who were exposed to blue light became as alert as those who drank 2 cups of coffee. Blue light filters have been developed for mobile devices to help with sleep issues. Apps are available for Android devices that filter blue light on screens. Updates to the iPhone, iPad, and Amazon Fire tablet have added blue light filters. Twilight is a free app that filters blue light on Android device screens. It can be set to turn on by itself, or users can turn it on and off when they want. In the app settings, you can change the intensity of the filter, the color, and the time the filter turns on and off. Twilight works across all apps, though some apps may not work fully when Twilight's filter is on. There is a YouTube video that explains Twilight use. Twilight is available free for Android devices in the Google Play Store. Apple updated its operating system for iPhone and iPad earlier this year. Included in the update is Night Shift, a blue light filter. This feature is available on newer iPhones and iPads, including the iPhone 5S and later, and the iPad Air and later. Night Shift can be set to turn itself on every night, or for the user to turn it on and off as wanted. To turn on Night Shift automatically every night, go to Settings, then Display, then Brightness, and then Night Shift. On the Night Shift settings, move the switch to Schedule Night Shift. It can be set for Night Shift to go on and off at specific times, or at sunset and sunrise. In settings, you can also adjust the color of the filter. Night Shift can also be turned on and off in Control Center on the iPhone and iPad. Open Control Center by swiping up from the bottom of the screen. The sun and moon icon there identifies Night Shift. Tap it to turn Night Shift on or off at any time. In an update to Fire tablets at the end of last year, Amazon introduced Blue Shade to filter blue light on screens. Blue Shade is available on more recent Fire tablets. To turn on Blue Shade on a Fire tablet, swipe down from the top of the screen and tap Blue Shade. To adjust the color, go to Settings, then Display, and finally Blue Shade. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Hundreds of Christians gathered recently in front of the United States Capitol building on a cold and rainy day. They began a public reading of their holy book, the Bible. They kept reading for 90 hours. The event is called the U.S. Capitol Bible Reading Marathon. It marks the National Day of Prayer and has been taking place for 27 years. Pastor Jeffrey Light of Novum Baptist Church in Riva, Virginia, spoke to VOA about the event. He said its goal is to show the importance of religion in American life. It's foundational for who we are as human beings to know our purpose. And our purpose comes from our Creator, Light said. Few know the part of religion in America better than Alan Cooperman. He leads study of the subject for the Washington-based Pew Research Center. The center did two major studies on religion in the U.S. in 2007 and 2014. The research found that the American public is growing less religious. The percentage of Americans who say they believe in God has dropped a little, Cooperman told VOA. He explained that the percentage of Americans who say they pray daily has dropped, along with the percentage who say they go to religious services at least once a month. Cooperman said the share of Americans who do not identify with any religion has been rising very quickly. In his words, it's gone from 7% in 2000, 16% in 2007, to 23% overall today. Cooperman believes the drop in religious involvement reflects a generational change. Young Americans are growing into adulthood with looser ties to religion. The children of today are also less involved in religious activities than the children of past generations. But lawmakers and government officials are more likely to be religious than the general public. Organized faith appears to still play an important part in U.S. politics. More than 90% of the United States Congress is Christian, compared to 70% of the general public. At a recent Senate discussion, members of Congress talked about how they balance faith and politics. Senator James Lankford is a Republican from Oklahoma. He told VOA that faith is the lens he looks through. He added, if it's a faith, it affects everything. Many religions are represented in Congress. Along with Christian legislators are Muslims, Hindus, and Jews. There are also some atheist lawmakers. For Cooperman, even the increasing number of non-religious Americans may not be enough to change the role of faith in American life and politics. The American public remains overwhelmingly religious, he said. In his words, it's a very religious country. 3/4 of Americans, about 77% of the population, still identify with a religious group. Pastor Jeffrey Light agrees. He said the role of religion will continue to play an important part in this year's presidential election. For me and those that are seekers of the Word of God, he said, we will certainly seek a leader who honors God. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.